With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Yesterday, I received a very well-crafted email from a young man who attends Reedley Middle College High School. He explained to me that we met earlier this year at the FFA conference, and we chatted about our love for showing pigs. I showed 3 pigs in high school for FFA. He attached pictures of his pigs and told me that he will be showing for the 3rd year at the Big Fresno Fair, and he was reaching out to see if I could be an add-on sponsor. He said that the money raised is going toward his college education fund, and he has plans to attend Cal Poly. So, you know, I applaud this young man for making a connection at an event and for following up. It really does take courage to do both of those things. And so I encourage you now who are listening to reach out to your local organizations or even the county fair and see if there are any students who might need a sponsor. Also, some of these students don't live on a farm. I didn't growing up, and they might not have access to a high school farm like I did. So another way that you might be able to support is if you have the space, offer up housing for their animal and maybe mentor a student. You know, it's really important that we support these FFA students because they are the next generation of our agriculture advocates, our agriculture professionals, and our future farmers and ranchers. All right, now let's get into today's show headlines with today's top story. Farmer-to-Farmer Education Act introduced in the Senate. Senators recently introduced the Farmer-to-Farmer Education Act. Senators Ben Ray Lujan, a New Mexico Democrat, and Jerry Moran, a Kansas Republican, introduced the bill last week. The legislation would leverage existing technical assistant resources by supporting farmer-led educational networks and build capacity for new ones, particularly for communities historically marginalized and existing systems, as a key strategy to increase adoption of conservation practices. As farmers and ranchers are met daily with unique challenges, including unexpected weather, they often turn to colleagues to find the right answer. The lawmakers say the bill fills a critical gap in federal programs to support and provide guidance to those networks. Specifically, the bill would authorize the National Resources Conservation Service to enter into a cooperative agreement with a community-based organization in each state that can identify and build on established and peer-to-peer networks and/or create new ones. NAFB contributed to that report, and now here's AgNet West's Brian German with more agriculture news.
Early season optimism that certain weed pressures in rice fields would be lower this year did not entirely pan out. Rice Farm Advisor for Sutter, Yuba, Placer, and Sacramento counties, Whitney Brim DeForest, said there was a thought that last year's fallowing could have had a positive impact on weeds this season.
I would say that that has not come to fruition. We have pretty widespread resistance in some of our grass populations, so I think that's part of the problem. And then it's been just kind of a weird spring. It was, we had rain for a while there, and then we had cold temperatures. And so the rice was kind of slowed down. And I don't think it had necessarily the same effect on all of the grass species. But yeah, we have widespread, I'd say, grass problems still. But I mean, I also see some really nice looking fields. So I think, you know, it's definitely field dependent. So some populations are looking quite a bit harder to control than others.
It's been a positive market for California berries despite some of the challenges. Senior analyst covering fruits and tree nuts for Rabo Agri Finance, David Magana, described the market outlook for berry growers.
California strawberry planted area was at multi-year high, given that the industry is trying to keep up with strong demand. We've seen a very positive story across all berries, where per capita availability has been consistently improving over the past few months. So that's some positive development in the industry. Obviously, some challenges this season, some delays due to cold weather. But now we're in blueberry season and demand continues to improve. And now prices are at a good level and the crop in Georgia will be light. So that should be improving the outlook for California blueberries.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food,
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, it's a record for a USDA program. John Burge, Acting Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs at the Farm Service Agency, says more acres were enrolled in the Grasslands Conservation Reserve program this year than ever before.
So the sign-up for Grasslands ended on May 26th. And we had the highest number of acreage, the highest amount of acreage offered in the program history. There were 4.6 million acres that walked into our doors and offered to our offices. Now, during that process, we come up with some criteria to accept, and we also make those acceptance rates known to the producers, and we're going to accept now 2.7 million acres. Total, which is pretty fantastic. The states that you that are you know, the largest acreage might be those that you imagine. They're big grazing states, and the top states this year are Colorado at 430,000 and some odd acres, Nebraska at 417,000, just under 418,000 acres, and South Dakota at 325,000 acres. But the rest are really spread all over the country, and it's really a good opportunity for landowners to keep their land, as I said, in grazing and haying production, while at the same time giving us some of those ecosystem benefits that we that are part of our goals.
In exchange for a yearly rental payment, farmers enrolled in the program agree to remove environmentally sensitive land from agricultural production and to plant species that will improve the environmental health and quality of the land.
So Grasslands CRP is a pretty cool program. It is a, by definition, working lands conservation program where we can provide some financial assistance to producers and landowners to continue grazing and haying practices while protecting grasslands to further some of our CRP conservation efforts. Basically, what that means is we want to recognize that there is value to those grasslands acres for a number of the different priorities that we have in this administration, to include carbon capture, wildlife habitat, et cetera. And rather than seeking an opportunity to break those lands out and maybe start cropping them, we'd like to provide an incentive to keep those lands in livestock production and a grazing practice or a haying practice, and still reap the benefits that way. So that's sort of the goal and objective of the program, and it's been pretty darn successful the past several years.
Contracts for land enrolled in CRP are from 10 to 15 years in length. The long-term goal of the program is to reestablish valuable land cover to help improve water quality, prevent soil erosion, and reduce loss of wildlife habitat. The program was started in 1985 under President Reagan. In other news, much of the nation's cornfields are facing drought. Greg Peters, an Iowa-based LG Seeds agronomist, has spent time digging corn plants recently to assess the impact that drought is having on root development. He explains what he's seeing in the fields.
This year, we're seeing that the roots were stunted, especially early in the season. And the main reason was we had subsoil moistures here in the west, where we were 15 to 17 inches short a year ago. And as we moved into June this year, we were 9 inches below normal. The main thing that we saw is if we had timely rainfall, it would actually cause very rapid growth on that plant and root growth. And then it would go back through a stunt, and then we would have another rainfall come through, and it actually promoted the plant growth. But the roots were very limited. One of the things that we are seeing is there's hybrid differences. There's some that we consider our high yielding lines. Those tend to be more of a fibrous root system, so they tend to be more in the upper portion of the soil profile. Those are showing extreme stress this year.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, back in May, a bill was introduced in the U.S. Senate called the Animal Disease and Disaster Prevention, Surveillance, and Rapid Response Act of 2023. The legislation is designed to boost resources for programs that help prevent and respond to animal disease outbreaks. That includes the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program and the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank. National Cattlemen's Beef Association CEO Colin Woodall explains why it is so important for this marker bill to be included in the next farm bill.
So when you look at a farm bill, you never know exactly how quickly it's going to get done. This current farm bill expires on September 30th, and I know that there is a lot of effort by both House and Senate agriculture leadership to try to get it done by then, but we have to be prepared regardless. And a lot of that times, it means that we need to set different marker bills out there to make it very clear to Congress what our priorities are, and to let them know that ignoring those priorities or not addressing them is not acceptable. And so that's why we do marker bills, to make sure that we can show the support that we have on both sides of Capitol Hill, so that way when that farm bill process gets truly going and they put words on paper, we can expect those provisions to be included, things such as the National Animal Health Laboratory Network and, of course, the Foot and Mouth Disease Vaccine Bank that everybody is familiar with. All of this has to be done in order to help provide the tools to us as an industry to protect ourselves from foreign animal diseases, and more importantly, if we have an introduction or reintroduction of a foreign animal disease, that we have the tools to be able to fight back to protect ourselves and hopefully get our industry up and running when that happens.
Again, that was NCBA CEO Colin Woodall. And companion legislation was also introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives. And the Animal Agriculture Alliance and the National Institute for Animal Agriculture have partnered to combat misinformation about animal agriculture. The combination will maximize their areas of expertise to ensure sound, scientific information about animal agriculture is getting communicated effectively to key audiences. As part of that relationship, NIAA will serve as a resource for scientific research and educational expertise. The AAA will then be working to communicate this information to key audiences. Hannah Thompson-Weeman, Alliance President and CEO, said this partnership will give us greater access to technical experts to make sure we're communicating accurate, science-backed, and expert-supported information to these audiences. J.J. Jones, the NIAA Executive Director, said working alongside the AAA means we are positioned to better support the animal agriculture community in communicating science while combating misinformation. Now, the partnership will entail coordinating media responses on technical issues with third-party expertise and hosting regular issue updates with key stakeholders from each organization. But again, this new partnership includes both the Animal Agricultural Alliance and the National Institute for Animal Agriculture. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
A familiar trademark is turning 50. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The Seal of Cotton trademark from Cotton Incorporated is turning 50 this year. It was created back in 1973 to show that a product contained cotton. Within the first year, about 18% of Americans could identify the trademark. By the 1980s, that number was up to 63%. Now the trademark is registered in 70 countries with more than 950 brands and 190 worldwide licensees. More than 80% of consumers recognize the brand. Cotton Incorporated is a not-for-profit company that conducts research to benefit every link on the cotton supply chain and develops promotions that encourage the use and desirability of cotton and cotton products. It was founded in 1970 in response to the synthetic textile fibers encroachment on cotton's market share. Through Cotton Incorporated, cotton became the first commodity to market directly to consumers. The icon for this outreach was the Seal of Cotton trademark. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McGowan. Farm economics impacts tax and estate planning. So what can be expected in the farm economy over the coming months, and what planning steps should you be thinking about utilizing? What does the near future look like in the ag economy, and what tax and estate planning steps should you be considering? It does appear that there will be slower economic growth triggered by lower grain prices and strong input costs. That means tighter margins for producers. Also, the trend of lower inventories in cattle and hogs will continue, resulting in lower feed consumption. Times are especially tough in the hog industry, with some producers exiting. The high variability and uncertainty of farm income will continue, so stay focused on management. Continued inflation increases commodity prices, but it also raises the cost of inputs and grows asset values on the balance sheet, which could have estate planning implications. Depending on whether you think you will have a high income year or not, you can either accelerate income and defer expenses or vice versa, use farm income averaging, change rental arrangements, or create entities to reduce self-employment tax and consider whether it's time to make gifts. But always take a broad look at the economics of your operation in light of your goals and objectives and put a plan in place that works for you. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McGowan.
During this blistering summer, millions of us are either coping directly with the record-breaking heat or certainly have heard news reports about it. It's big news.
More than 125 million Americans are under heat alerts. That's more than one-third of the United States population. In the coming days,
reportedly, thousands of people have been suffering from heat-related illnesses. Hundreds have died from heat stroke this summer. And although some of us may say, nah, we're tough, heat doesn't bother us, one expert says
heat illness is something we shouldn't just kind of glance over.
That's Dee Jepson. She's a professor of safety and health, Ohio State University. And she says a lot of people get very sick from the heat and many lose their lives from it because the symptoms can sort of sneak up on you. And those symptoms may not be noticed at first by others around you. Also, she says the symptoms vary with each person.
Heat illness is really hard to recognize and hard to predict because each one of our bodies, you know, are so different.
And susceptibility to the heat varies with age, with the kinds of medications we may be on, and with how acclimated we are to being in the heat in the first place.
And we also know that once a person has had heat stress or heat stroke, they are more susceptible to that again sooner.
So we're going to try to touch on the general symptoms to watch out for in ourselves and in others, starting with mild symptoms and working up to the more serious. And again, different folks will exhibit different signs of heat stress. First,
if you get a heat rash or any type of prickly or blistery parts of the skin, that's showing that your sweat glands have become clogged. Your sweat glands are inflamed. And the sweat cannot evaporate from your body in these conditions.
Another early warning sign, heat cramps.
Whether that's in your legs, your arms, or your stomach. And really what's happening when our bodies are cramping, it's the loss of body salt through the sweat. And that causes the water to rush into our muscles. And that results in our cramps and our spasms that we get.
But as the effects of the heat really start to intensify and become more dangerous, we may experience
fatigue or dizziness, even irritability, impaired judgment, any type of lack of ability to concentrate.
Things are really getting serious at that point.
Now the heat is affecting our blood flow into our brain. The body's trying to redirect that blood to release the heat from the skin. But when it does that, it kind of starts to affect us through our whole nervous system.
And at that point, we have to get cooled down pretty fast because Jepson says when our body temperature goes above 100 degrees for any length of time out there in that heat,
that's in the fatal zone.
So those are some things to watch for next time, how to better handle the heat and avoid heat stress and stroke in the first place. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do you listen?
I just want to stay informed while I'm on the go.
News on the radio, it's nice because it's just a quick snippet and I don't have to go searching for it or grab a paper.
I listen to radio because anywhere that I'm going, I'm listening to music or I'm listening to a talk show or I'm just trying to stay up on current events.
I always turn into the radio to see if I need to take shelter, where it's hitting, to see what I need to be preparing for.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Like a relay race in track, July has handed off the price baton to August, and the last major leg of the weather market is underway. I'm Mark Offold with your bottom line report this first day of August, brought to you by Helena. A month from now, as we approach Labor Day, the only remaining weather factor really will be an early frost. But between now and then, August promises to be a volatile month for corn and soybeans. The most recent drought monitor showed 53% of U.S. soybeans in an area experiencing drought conditions. The Iowa Soybean Association noted expanded crop stress in a recent newsletter to their members. Agronomists point out that the soybean crop will soon pass its highest water needs of the season, making the next 10 days most important. This is the bottom line report. Helena asks, what's in your tank? Their technology is proven to help your fungicides and insecticides work harder, especially this time of year now as we enter August. Visit HelenaAgra.com to enhance your tank mix. Superior Livestock's annual Video Royale in Nevada underway and setting records, especially for weaned calves. That's our bottom line to start the month. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for Agnet West. Welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most, Let's Get Untamed. We are coming at you live today from Merced, California, from the Merced Mall. We got a little booth set up here. We're just having a good time and just promoting, you know, farm-to-fork cuisine, because this definitely is one of the capitals of where this whole movement starts. And I wanted to do something a little bit fun, being that, you know, it's starting to get hot and we got all these summer days that we're dealing with. Let's do something fun and fresh. What about a slaw? And what about we take that slaw to another level and we do it almost like we were going to do this for a luau. And this is my version of a pineapple Hawaiian luau slaw, and I think you're going to love it. Let's get started. The very first step I need is 2 quarts of cabbage. And I want to make sure my cabbage, when I get my cabbage, I always like to remove the first layer, then give it a rinse, pat it down dry, cut it into 4s, and I want to slice it very, very thin. I'm going to do the same thing with my purple cabbage as well. So we get our green cabbage, we get our purple cabbage. Now we need 2 quarts of the purple cabbage. We only need 2 cups of the purple cabbage, and 2 quarts of the green cabbage. This is very important because the purple cabbage is very, very bitter. So you don't want to have a whole lot of that in there. I'm going to take 2 carrots as well, and I'm going to julienne peel those. I like to peel them, cut them in half, and then peel them into little julienne strips. They're fantastic. And to that same bowl, I'm going to add 1 cup of mayonnaise. I'm going to add 1/2 cup of pineapple juice, and I'm going to add 1/4 cup of sugar. I'm going to mix this around. I'm going to let this sit for 4 hours. And the reason why I let it sit for 4 hours is I want the cabbage to be nice and crispy. But more importantly, I really want that flavor of the pineapple and that sweet flavor to permeate throughout the whole dish. Now, in order to fully do this the right way, it's very simple. All you have to do is make sure that you're using great ingredients. I've had people before that wanted to use cabbage that was, it didn't look that good. And I can't stress enough that when you're doing a simple dish like this and you want to have a very simple outcome to the recipe. You don't have to do much to it, but just love the dish in itself and love the ingredients that you're working with. I promise this is one slaw that will not disappoint ever. Once again, my name is Albert J. Hernandez. You can call me the Untamed Chef, and this is Agnet West. And if you want to follow me on my Instagram, or you want to follow me anytime from any of my website or social media, you can follow me directly at www.ajhtheuntamedchef.com.
Here's a 1999 hit song that some would say typifies the situation for many hog producers right now.
If we were to look at the estimated returns for average size furrow finish operators in Iowa, for example, returns have been negative for the most part for the year so far.
USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagham says if you're losing money on every hog you produce, one tactic you can take is to cut that production down a bit. And indeed, in USDA's latest Hogs and Pigs report,
producers indicated intentions to farrow about 2.9 million head of hogs during June, August, which would be about 4% below a year ago. Their intentions for the September-November period would be to farrow about just under 3 million head of hogs, which would be about 4.5% below a year ago.
Now, more pigs per litter will almost make up for fewer farrowings, but in the meantime, margins for many hog producers continue to be negative.
That's right, but I think things are starting to level out for them now.
USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Chekanowski says first, pork production is leveling off, and next year's output is expected to be 27.3 billion pounds, virtually the same as this year. And so,
given sort of flat production and, you know, normal growth in demand, we expect that supplies to be relatively tight next year, and that's going to be price supportive.
In fact, prices recently have started to strengthen.
And we expect prices to strengthen even further next year.
USDA is projecting hog prices this year to average 57.88 a hundredweight, but for 2024, that could rise up to 64.75, an increase of about 12%. So for hog producers who have had reason to say,
conditions are looking a little bit brighter going forward.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For our interview segment today, we're following up with a conversation I've been having with Stanislaus County's Anna Genasi and Stanislaus County nursery owner, Tim Roos. Tim's also a part of the Workforce Development Committee within Stanislaus County. Today, we're talking all about the committee, the programs offered, and some of the success stories from businesses who participated in the programs. Let's talk more about this committee. Tim, give me a Cliff Notes version of when it started, why it was created, and then let's you know, I'm sure it applies to all industries within Stanislaus County, but tie it into, you know, how it serves the agriculture industry and any current projects that are currently being funded through that.
Well, my involvement has been like the last 3 or 4 years, and before that, I actually do not know when it was developed. You know, when it actually started. I know that it had been around for a few years beforehand, at least, and maybe with a different name.
They just weren't spending the money.
And they weren't spending the money.
I think that's why this subcommittee was formed initially, is my understanding.
And I think there was a little bit of a disconnect as far as, it's governmental agencies. And so there are certain rules that are in place, probably for good measure, but you do have to stay within the box of what workforce has. And that there's a little bit of getting used to or getting to know the system, per se, as far as the way that that's how to maneuver the different steps as far as procuring, you know, monies. And Anna's found that out as far as some of the reimbursement versus an investment thing. And so there has been a good, but I will tell you that workforce has really championed, once they've gotten a little bit of traction, they've really championed trying to get to know the different sectors that have been out there. Ag for, and much to Anna's credit, and some of the individuals as well, and with the workforce, actually the boots on the ground, they have really gotten some good traction and really accomplished some neat things with the supervisor committee as far as the training that goes on with that. With and maybe Anna can speak to a little bit about the programs that they've had here at the Farm Bureau. But it's been that collaboration between the governmental agency that has money with private industry that wants everything right now so that we can start going forward. And so that has been the kind of the interface that we've been learning from both sides how to maneuver.
Mm-hmm. Anna, any success stories or current projects that are happening?
Yeah, just to give a little background, probably 18 months ago, we, Farm Bureau, were approached by Workforce Development and said, hey, there's this idea been kicked around in the workforce development world about this sector partnership and a way for this federal funding to actually make its way to the industries that need it. And as you might imagine, as a county department, they were having trouble or hitting hurdles connecting with business owners, right? Mm-hmm. There's that kind of, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, you know, and people kind of laugh. And, so the idea was go find a trusted entity within the industry and pay them to carry out some of these programs. And so that's what happened. So the county workforce development folks came to us here at Farm Bureau about 18 months ago and said, hey, we want to pay you, Farm Bureau, for your time in coordinating these meetings and getting industry representatives from agriculture in the room so that workforce can highlight the programs that they have with money attached. Mm-hmm. So the first year, I'm just, you know, I get so much joy out of helping our members, and I feel like we just knocked it out of the park. We were able to fill this boardroom with 50 people in our county, you know, decision makers in their companies. So if they weren't mm-hmm. the CEO or what have you, they were the HR specialist, right? Mm-hmm. And so we had cross commodity, you know, different areas of the processing line, right? Regionally, there was representation. And that first meeting really focused on what are the hurdles? What are the things that are giving you heartburn? And one of the low-hanging fruit from that meeting was, gosh, I have this great employee. They've been with me for 10 years. I promoted them to a manager role, and they're drowning. And it's because we, you know, haven't equipped them with the managerial skills, right? They may have been the best, most responsible worker on our team, but we haven't provided them, you know, the background in now managing mm-hmm. what was once their peers. So we worked with Workforce Development, were able to secure some funding through them that paid for a supervisory development academy specific for agriculture. So we had 40 people, 20 in English, 20 in Spanish, go through 20 hours of instruction on all the heavy hitting topics, right? How to deal with a difficult employee, disciplinary action, communication, working with, you know, different generations within the workforce. And then just about a month ago, we held this really sweet luncheon and graduation ceremony for all of the folks who successfully completed the program.
Wow.
And talk about a win, man. Mm-hmm. Like the smiles on people's faces, the acknowledgement from the employers that they're seeing changes in the employees that they sent. And the beauty was through the program, Workforce Development covered like 85% of the tuition fees.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was just, it was a really amazing experience. I'm so thankful that we were able to bring that to fruition. And the plan going forward is to offer that at least once a year, if not twice a year, depending on the need moving forward.
When it comes to funding, you've had these great success stories. Are you at all worried about a lack of funding or a lack of, you know, or the programs and through this committee being canceled, you know, as you move forward?
I can say that from a budgetary standpoint, last year we spent 1% of the workforce development budget on, and forgive me if I'm off by a little bit, but, but 1%. The goal is in this next year and the years to come is 10% of that budget. So we will have 10 times the funds to be able to disperse within the ag industry itself. It's about finding the programs that fit into the model that Workforce has put forward.
Yes.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
A deadline extension for an organic dairy program. Organic dairy producers have more time to submit applications for the USDA's Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program. Applications originally were due last week, but USDA has extended the deadline. The program was established to help mitigate several factors that have created unique hardships in the organic dairy industry. John Burge, Acting Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs at the Farm Service Agency, says the funds will assist with projected marketing costs in 2023, calculated using their marketing costs in 2022.
Several weeks ago, we announced $104 million available to organic dairy operations to assist with projected marketing costs in 2023. And that program is designed to help producers mitigate some of the market volatility that they're experiencing because of higher input and transportation costs and, you know, unstable feed supplies.
He says the qualifications are pretty simple.
Well, the main thing that folks need to do is when they come in to apply, the organic dairy operations are required to provide USDA their certification of organic status, confirming that their operation is an organic dairy and has been in 2023 and 2022, along with any certification of milk production in hundredweight. And aside from that, we'll take it from there.
We have more information on our website, agnetwest.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
Western Growers is hosting a webinar next week regarding California LGMA's standardized approach to product testing, data collection, and considerations regarding flooding assessments. Prior to the August 8th webinar, comments are being sought at leafygreenguidance.com. The California LGMA Advisory Board recently approved a proposed metrics and standards change that the technical committee put forth. In addition, current information regarding testing after flooding events has raised the need for reviewing best practices related to flooding assessments, specifically soil sampling and testing. California LGMA Technical Director Greg Comar will be providing details on the protocols to ensure that LGMA accepted on-farm food safety practices are fully understood and implemented. More information about the webinar is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Precision technology growth continues. The 2023 Precision Agriculture Dealership Survey shows continued growth in technology to streamline and increase the efficiency of operations, such as in sprayer boom section, nozzle control, turn compensation, fleet management, and telemetry. These are possible reactions to input costs and skilled worker shortages, according to Purdue University and CropLife America, organizations, organizers of the survey. The enthusiasm continues for applying crop inputs with drones. More dealers will offer drone imagery, but fewer dealers are offering satellite or aerial imagery, and dealers say imagery use is declining on farms. On-farm data continues to be used the most for fertilizer-related decisions and for hybrid variety selection. But in the last few years, dealers have not increased their use of on-farm data for decision-making. The survey shows that 89% of dealers use auto guidance on their application equipment, GPS-guided boom section, nozzle controllers on sprayers, which reduce doubling up and skips. They're also used at 82% of dealerships, and sprayer turn compensation continues to grow, now at 41%. NAFB contributed to that report. For Agnet West, I'm Danielle Leal.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvorsen on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.